Today on the Undivided Podcast, Washington State reaches a very important milestone.
This has not been some rogue executive running rampant like an elephant through the tall grass of our civil liberties.
Plus, we discuss what issues will most impact your voting decisions in the 2022 midterms and whether the renewed abortion debate will change the Republican Party's strategy.
I think as candidates, as long as you're presenting yourself and your ideas and your values in a compassionate, understanding way, then I think it will be okay.
Plus, a Wordle controversy. Is it contrived? Or can the New York Times simply not help itself? Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Hello and welcome to the Undivided Podcast. I'm Brandi Cruz. You know what today is? It's a big day. Huge day. Big milestone. Today marks 800 days. 800 days since Washington Governor Jay Inslee declared a state of emergency around the coronavirus pandemic. 800 days. Here we still are with near unilateral power being exercised by the governor of our state and really no end in sight. This is something I've talked about a lot, not only on the Undivided Podcast, but even going back to my days at Fox, about what are the benchmarks for the governor giving up his emergency powers? What is the necessity at this stage for the governor to have emergency powers? I was trying to think, how can we mark the occasion today? You know, what would be appropriate to mark such a milestone? I don't know, maybe I'll have some wine tonight, or maybe a shot would be more appropriate. I was thinking also maybe I could just scream at the top of my lungs. I'm in a residential neighborhood, though. That might not be the best idea. You guys, maybe, are you in your car alone? Let's just scream. Let's scream it out quick. Hold on. I'll scream into a pillow, okay? You guys scream with, we'll just scream it out, okay? 3, 2. Oh, I felt nice. I felt nice. I like that. I have to do that more often. 800 days under a state of emergency, no end in sight. Meanwhile, other states, including other West Coast states, have already long ago, their governors given up their emergency power. And you've had states that have made laws to rein emergency power in and nothing of the sort here. Actually, hold on. Quick side note. Why didn't my dogs come to check on me? I was just screaming. Do you guys not care about me? God forbid I ever get attacked in my home. They're not going to do anything about it. Okay, back on track. Just today, the governor of Nevada announced that the Democratic governor of Nevada announced that he's lifting his state's state of emergency around COVID coming up on May 20th. So at least he put a date out there to say, yep, this is when it's going to end. And that had been in place for more than 2 years. So he put his in place March 12th, 2020. So Nevada's governor seems to think that they can end their state of emergency and be just fine. Now, he is running for re-election, so maybe that factored into his decision-making there. And then in the state of Arizona, Governor Doug Ducey, he just signed a new piece of legislation that will actually limit the ability of his successor to be able to use emergency powers. Now, Doug Ducey is a Republican, but he had actually been criticized by some in his own party who thought that he used his emergency powers too broadly. He had them in place for more than 2 years. Now he's signing this bill that will take effect after he leaves office, so he's not going to be impacted or influenced by it. But at least there's something being done to address this issue moving forward. And in fact, you know, I do understand the argument about don't change emergency powers within an emergency. You know, wait until after the emergency is done. So maybe that's what's happening here. But the new law that is going to be in effect in Arizona is after 120 days, a governor would have to get approval from the legislature if they want to continue their emergency declaration. And then every 30 days after that, the legislature would have to continue to sign off on it or to reject a state of emergency. And to me, that seems like a very common sense, very reasonable check on a governor's emergency power. You know, there are some people in Washington state, for instance, conservatives or Republicans who wanted it after 30 days. I don't think that's realistic. I think by and large, a governor is only going to use emergency authority or call a state of emergency if there's something serious going on. 120 days to me is enough time to try to get a hold of any emergency that you might have. 30 days, I don't think that's very productive to then send it to the legislature and involve that political arm after 30 days. But what Arizona's doing makes a lot of sense. I'm glad Ducey's supporting it now. I'm not sure if he would have supported that when he would have been subject to it. But so you've got all these governors, Democratic governors, Republican governors, who are finding a way to move past the emergency phase in the pandemic. Why can't Jay Inslee? Why does Jay Inslee think that he needs this crutch to lean on when other states have been willing to let that crutch go? Governor Inslee did this interview over the weekend at the Crosscut Festival. So Crosscut is a news site in Seattle. And the interview was done by my friend Bill Radke, who's a host for Seattle's NPR station, KUOW. And I want to play a couple of clips from it. One, because one of the clips is hilarious. And the other one, because one of the clips represents my least favorite thing, which is government gaslighting. But first to the one I think is hilarious. So I've been covering politics in Washington State for more than a decade. Governor Inslee has been the governor for almost that entire time. And he has these little things called Jayisms, where he just says weird shit. And it's just like, where, how are you stringing those sentences together? And he had one that I actually thought was kind of funny. He was asked about whether he's overstepping his emergency authority. And here's what he said.
This has not been some rogue executive running rampant like an elephant through the tall grass of our civil liberties.
Running rampant like an elephant through the tall grass of our civil liberties. I wonder if he has those things written out ahead of time or if they just come to him. I feel like they just come to him.
This has not been some rogue executive running rampant like an elephant through the tall grass of our civil liberties.
I'm just going to operate on the belief that those things just pop into his head. Running rampant like an elephant through the tall grass of our civil liberties. But anyway, there are definitely people who believe he's been running rampant like an elephant
through the tall grass of our civil liberties.
Republicans have been beating the drum on emergency power reform for 2 years. And there were even some Democrats in the legislature who support emergency power reform and who brought forth bills to curb emergency powers that didn't make it through. The majority party Democrats just weren't willing to push through these really reasonable checks and balances. So anyway, during this interview with Bill Radke, listen to how the governor kind of tries to spin this issue.
We have a system where the governors can be countermanded. The legislature at any moment could have countermanded any single one of the you know, probably several dozen decisions that I've made. And they have agreed with every one of those decisions. And the reason I say that is that they have not even made an attempt to, at least the majority, an attempt to remove our protocols. So I keep coming back to my central point, Bill. We have been unified on this across our branches of our democratic system. And I think it is inured greatly to our benefit. So I think we're going to stick with the Constitution of Democracy, which where everybody agrees, the governor, the legislature, the judicial. That's not a problem. And that's the situation.
I'm actually speechless. You know, I understand what the governor is, how the governor is spinning this. But here's the problem I have. This is Crosscut and KUOW. These are only liberals listening to this, progressives. I mean, this is not something that moderates really or that conservatives are going to be listening to. And I feel like what the governor is doing there is gaslighting, and gaslighting to an audience that's not going to question whether they're being gaslit, because they mostly agree with the governor or almost entirely agree with the governor. The governor would not be able to get away with an answer like that or a statement like that to a Republican or moderate audience. He just wouldn't. And I actually think Bill Radke, you know, he did press the governor on the issue of emergency power reform as the governor was trying to clearly get out of that line of questioning. I think it could have gone further, but in the setting, I like Bill. I think he did a fine job. But my real frustration is the governor refuses to just accept or acknowledge the real frustrations, the reasonable concerns that people have with one person having this much authority. And there isn't universal agreement on what he's doing. And if, you know, there's people who want to believe everything the governor says and who are going to hear that and be like, oh, people, Republicans are just making up issues. There's clearly no issues. The governor says that they've agreed with everything he's done by virtue of not undoing it. So basically what he's saying is because the legislature didn't pass emergency power reform, everyone's in agreement with what he's doing. And that's just ridiculous. There were some Democrats who tried to get a bill through. And I mean, it wasn't the best bill, but it was something. And then that was derailed by other Democrats. So to suggest like, hey, nothing to see here, that's just not realistic. Now, what he's saying is this is the way the government works. I'm the governor. Democrats happen to be in control because of a vote of the people of the House and the Senate. And lawsuits filed against me because of these emergency orders have been rejected by the courts. So he's saying all three branches of government are working as they should. And look, I agree with that. Votes have consequences, and Democrats are in control in our state. And so Republicans can be upset by the governor's emergency power, but they're not in control. They're in the minority party. And just because they're really, really mad doesn't mean that the governor just has to stop what he's doing. But to me, the governor has never really fully acknowledged the frustration that exists on this issue, or perhaps the necessity for wanting a legislative body to have more checks and balances on a governor. During this interview with Bill Radke, so Bill asks him about, you know, emergency power reform and frustration. Listen to what the governor says.
Well, first off, I think it's a legitimate question. You know, we should be asking questions like this about, you know, separation of powers.
But then just a few moments later, the governor turns around and says this.
To some degree, this is an artificial debate that I don't think we have to have.
So again, does he really understand the frustrations that surround this issue? And from the perspective of many, many voters in his state, who he's supposed to represent everyone, not just the Democrats, does he understand the frustrations they have with wanting to know where their elected leaders stand on issues like mask mandates and vaccine mandates, and not wanting one person
running rampant like an elephant through the tall grass of our civil liberties?
Up, I want to talk about what your priorities are for the 2022 midterms and how much is this new renewed debate over abortion going to impact the results of the 2022 midterms. But first, I'm going to give you a spiel about becoming an undivided subscriber because we're about to expand. So if you love this podcast, you're about to get double the amount of undivided podcast every single week. Starting in June, we'll have a little launch. Thankfully, since I launched this in November after I quit my job with Fox, I've gotten so much support and the listenership on the podcast has been great and has been growing. And so it's really time for us to pick it up a notch and to be putting out more every single week. But part of doing that is being able to continue to grow our base of paid subscribers. So if you love the podcast, now is a great time to become a subscriber because you're going to be able to get access to bonus episodes of the podcast every single week starting in June. So there are two ways to become a paid subscriber to Undivided, and it's for as little as $5 a month. You can do that at Patreon, patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided. Or you can become a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. By doing so, you're helping to grow this movement and this mission to give common sense a comeback. So a lot of exciting things coming with Undivided. I believe first or second week in June, we'll make an announcement. And if you love this podcast, you're going to get double of it every single week. I'm so excited. And maybe by then, my voice will be better. I've been very stuffed up, as you can tell. I'm very nasally today. So I'll work on that. But that's my 1 minute pitch to turning you into an Undivided subscriber. When the Supreme Court draft decision around Roe dropped last week, I think I was among people who immediately started to wonder, okay, what does this mean and the timing of it mean for the 2022 midterms? Up until that point, when the draft reversal came down, my thought was it was going to be a horrific midterm for Democrats. And it left me wondering whether the now potential of a reversal of Roe is going to galvanize Democrats in a meaningful way, or moderates in a way that would make them vote on the issue of reproductive rights before they'd vote on an issue like inflation or public safety. And I will say, I do personally know some moderate women, moderate suburban women, that's the key demo, right, when you want to flip congressional seats, who are very upset by the possible reversal of Roe. Now, in Washington state, I've said this before, Washington state, it is a non-issue. The issue of abortion is not going to change here. In fact, previous times I've been a little critical of Democrats who have tried to suggest that it would, tried to fearmonger people into, you know, remaining Democratic voters out of some totally manufactured belief that abortion rights could be reversed here or eroded here.
We will not allow the tentacles of Texas to get into Washington state.
But anyway, I really did think, okay, what are the chances that this issue turns the tide for Democrats, and what was shaping up to be an atrocious midterms isn't going to be so bad for them anymore because you have so many voters who are going to be energized to try to protect women's reproductive rights, and namely, again, women in the suburbs who are moderates and who otherwise might have been willing to vote for Republicans. So I wanted to put out a poll. I first put it out to subscribers on Patreon and Locals asking, if the 2022 midterm election were held today, which issue would most drive your votes? And the options I gave were the economy, public safety, or abortion. And I tend to believe that I do have a lot of moderates who subscribe to Undivided, because that's kind of who the show is built for. So I thought that asking subscribers would be a really good barometer. And the most common response to that poll overwhelmingly was the economy. 56% of people polled said the economy would be the number one issue that would decide their votes if the 2022 midterm were held today. 39% said public safety, and roughly 5% said abortion. And I specifically didn't specify whether it was reproductive rights or stricter abortion laws that would be driving your vote, because I just wanted to know about the issue itself and where that stacked up related to issues like the economy and public safety. Natalie wrote, economy with public safety a close second. Michael said, it's silly to vote on abortion in Washington, regardless of how you may personally feel about the issue. It's a settled matter here. H said, yes, food prices and gas are out of control, yet the amount of crime in my area is crazy. I'm not even able to go to Safeway without witnessing stealing and drug use. Andrew said, the amount of value our retirement and stock accounts have lost under Biden is more than I make in a year. So I really do think, at least here in Washington, and I know there's some people who listen to this outside of Washington state, I do feel like there is an understanding that the abortion issue here, if you're living in Washington, is a decided issue. I mean, things could change in 20, 30 years, but nobody who pays attention to politics here believes that they'll be impacted by the reversal of Roe. So while I do believe it could galvanize Democratic voters who maybe are fearful of a national abortion ban, the other issues going on are more tangible. You know, when you look at the cost of gasoline, when you look at the cost of groceries, when you look at your 401k, God forbid, that's real. You can't lie about it. You can't minimize it. You can't tell voters it's not a big deal, because they know it's a big deal. They feel it every single day. So I do understand that it's probably going to be hard for Democrats to spin or overcome those issues. But I was still curious, you know, in a blue state like Washington, does this change the strategy of Republicans when it comes to how they're going to campaign for the 2022 midterms? This issue of abortion now coming to the forefront and the possibility it could really get Democrats out to vote in greater numbers and even sway some moderates. I spoke with Washington State Republican Party Chairman Caleb Heimlich. For you as a Republican leader in a blue state trying to help Republicans win elections, how concerning is a possible reversal of Roe for you?
Well, I would say we don't know for sure, right? We just don't know what that impact will be definitively. A couple thoughts I have. Kind of number one, it won't change the law in Washington state, right? As you well know, the voters voted in 1970 and then in 1991 as well, to codify our law. So if this is the final decision, and if that is what the court decides, it still won't change the law in Washington state. Now, we certainly saw last week that the Washington State Democrats are going to do everything they can, including the governor holding a press conference and the attorney general being there and members of Congress being there and state legislators being there, to make that the number one issue. And so I think for the Democrats, they see this as a opportunity to turn out their base. Because I do think if you look at, objectively look at the state of politics today, the left is not thrilled with Biden, with the Democrats either. So I think they view this as an opportunity to really galvanize and motivate their base. And so how will that impact? I guess we don't know. The second group was with swing voters. I don't know definitively how this will play either. I think it will vary district by district, and it will vary candidate by candidate, race by race, in how it ends up impacting things. It's a complicated topic, and it is a complicating thing for candidates to just be careful about how they speak about this issue, because it is a very sensitive issue for a lot of people. And people on both sides get very passionate. And this is something that I think as candidates, as long as you're presenting yourself and your ideas and your values in a compassionate, understanding way, then I think it will be okay.
Have you given candidates talking points, so to speak, or directions on how to address this issue?
Not yet, but I know that there are, like, I know the caucuses are talking with people, and I know that's an internal conversation there. I have not spoken directly to any of our candidates, but I have been speaking particularly with some of our county chairs and some other folks about kind of how to make sure we're talking about this in a way that is as unifying as possible. Because I do think when you start to boil some things down and you look at the polling and where people are at on this issue, The Democrats are radical when it comes to the idea that there should be no restrictions whatsoever. That's what Jen Psaki said last week. That's what President Biden believes, that abortion should be legal up until birth. And that the vast majority of Americans don't believe that.
Biden believes that abortion should be legal up until birth?
Jen Psaki said, when asked by Peter Ducey, does the president believe there should be any restrictions on abortion whatsoever? She said no. And so, I mean, I guess I don't know what they would define that as, but that seems to be their position. And I would be curious what Governor Inslee would say about that same question. If most of the time, Democrats are unwilling to answer, where is the line acceptable to them? And as I said, the people of Washington State have voted in 1970 and 1991 saying when they believe the line should be. It's a complicated issue. And I would, if I were to speak to candidates, I would just encourage them to listen and then speak in a way that's compassionate, hopefully understanding, and also talk about the issues that are motivating them. And I think ultimately, when you get back to why do people vote and why do people vote for the people that they vote for, I think right now there are so many issues that are leading them to vote for Republicans: inflation, public safety, the economy, economic concerns, cost of a gallon of gas, the cost of groceries, the decisions that Governor Inslee has made, and now we're 800 days into a state of emergency, the people that he has laid off for, I would argue, arbitrary reasons. All of those factors, I think, are going to be things that our candidates are maybe more motivated to talk about this year. And so we'll kind of see how that goes.
And as you talk about kind of the issue of extremes, and I would argue, and I wrote a piece about this, I think that it's hard to fit people into a pro-choice or pro-life box because, you know, you look at a place like Oregon where there are no restrictions at all on abortion. And then you look at states like Arkansas that are going to, you know, ban abortion, including in cases of rape or incest. Now, if you had a Republican candidate who had very strong beliefs on the other end, you know, they wanted a full ban on abortion, is that a messaging conversation where you would ask them to hold back on that belief?
Well, ultimately, I would say that in general, the Republican Party is a big tent party. I think you would find, as you talk to a lot of our candidates, we have a wide array of opinions on a wide array of topics. I personally would classify myself as pro-life. I believe in the value and inherent dignity of each individual. But I think even as a pro-life person in a state like Washington, I would like to see things done gradually. And I think as a pro-life individual, I think we should all be happy about the fact that in 2000, the year 2000, there were 20,000 abortions in Washington state. In the year 2020, that number was down to 10,000. That's good. And so I think as a pro-life person, that means I care about resources and other opportunities. And so that's, I guess, what I would, if I was having a conversation with a candidate, let's talk holistically about how we can promote life, how we can help people have options to ideally make the choice to choose life. And that's what we should focus on rather than kind of a immediate ban, which I think in Washington state, it's not politically feasible or realistic.
Is that what you would want, though, in a perfect world, if Republicans were in charge in Washington, a total ban?
As I said, I don't think that's realistic in the immediate term or in the near future. I mean, and I don't, that's a long ways down the road if it were to go that way.
But is it something you'd want?
No, I mean, I think even there, I personally, if I was snap my fingers, the governor, which would be a ridiculous hypothetical, I do think you would need some reasonable exemptions for certain circumstances and other things. I don't think it's realistic to say we're going all the way back to a total ban, because even in that circumstance, you would be putting people in danger, I would believe.
All right, just to sum up the conversation around abortion, with the renewed debate around reproductive rights in this country, does it represent a significant shift in the way in which the Republican Party is going to go about running in the 2022 midterms?
I don't believe it does at this point. I think for the most part, the primary concerns remain the primary concerns. The issues that motivated these candidates to step up and run, I think, are the issues that are motivating the voters. And so I think that will be the thrust of the campaign, is those economic, public safety, education, and then government reform relating to emergency powers. I think those are going to be kind of the primary drivers, the primary conversation pieces that you'll see Republican candidates focusing on. I think the Democrats will probably try and insert this into the conversation in 2022. They don't have President Trump in the White House to insert into the conversation as they did for the last 4 years. They may still try and tie Republicans to Donald Trump, at this point a private citizen. But I think that is kind of their messaging tactic, is to talk about Trump. And now it's going to be to talk about abortion. But I don't think that's going to be a primary driver at this point.
So I wanted to quick revisit something Caleb Heimlich, the chair of the Washington State Republican Party, just said about President Biden's views on abortion. Namely, I hadn't heard the clip to fact check him in the moment, but again, here's what Caleb said about the president's potential view on abortion.
The Democrats are radical when it comes to the idea that there should be no restrictions whatsoever. That's what Jen Psaki said last week. That's what President Biden believes, that abortion should be legal up until birth.
So just to be clear, I wanted to play that full exchange between Peter Ducey and White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The president's position on choice has evolved over time. So just checking for his official position. Does he support any limits on abortion right now?
Peter, the president has talked about his position many times. He supports the right of a woman to make choices about her own body with her doctor.
But I know that one of the Democrats that he endorsed and who won their primary this week, Tim Ryan, said yesterday that he does not support any limits on abortion. Is that where the president's thinking is now?
The president has stated his view many times.
So does the president support abortion up until the moment of birth?
The president has spoken about this many times, Peter, and I would refer you to his own comments about abortion and a woman's right to choose and make decisions about her body with her doctor, which is what any of those women would do.
Now, her answer is just to, dismiss Peter's question and refer to President Biden's previous comments. But as Peter Ducey stated at the beginning of that line of questioning, the president's view on abortion has changed a lot over the course of his political career. And I'll be honest, it isn't really clear where the president stands on the issue of abortion, whether he has limits to his pro-choice beliefs. Now, the president has said, on the campaign trail that he supports codifying Roe v. Wade. He supports a woman's right to choose, but
I can't find anything of him on the record saying that that right is absolute, that he would support like a state like Oregon, where there are no limits on abortion. You can have an abortion up to the point of birth. So the only thing I can really glean from Biden's current stance is that he supports Roe v. Wade, which allows for abortions up to the point of fetal viability. But for instance, there's been various statements made by the president. I mean, you know, back in like the 1970s, he said he was not in support of the Supreme Court's decision on abortion in regard to Roe v. Wade. I don't know if anybody should be held to a position they had 40, 50 years ago. But then he fast forward a little bit and he evolved up to 2007. His views had softened a little bit, but he did say he was not in support of partial birth abortions or late term abortions. So if the president's views have changed since then, he's not on the record as saying that he would support abortion up to the moment of birth. And so that's what Peter Ducey was trying to get out of Jen Psaki, an official White House position on that, President Biden's position, but he did not get it. So I don't think it's fair to say that the president believes in abortions up to the point of birth. The president just has not definitively come out, at least in the last 15 years, and really made his opinion clear on that. Coming up, the renewed abortion debate has sparked a Wordle controversy. Yes, I said Wordle controversy about abortion. We'll discuss that coming up next. But first, I want to talk about the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. And specifically, I want to have a conversation about cash out refis. This is something more and more people are considering. I spoke with Rich Hunt, the founder of 1530 Mortgage, about cash out refis and about who might benefit from one. Is it okay if you're somebody who's struggling financially to do a cash out refi to help you get by, or is that not a good use of that?
No, I would say it was probably the best use of it. It's a strategy that basically is going to let you get out of debt, and you're using your home to do that. It would be nice to save some money and put something away rather than give it to the banks and their high interest credit card debt.
So if you're interested in a cash out refi, or maybe you just have some questions about it to see if it's right for you, give my friends at 1530 Mortgage a call, 206-207-7777. Tell them you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. You can also visit them at 1530mortgage.com. 1530 Mortgage, NMLS ID 1761573, Equal Housing Opportunity. For informational purposes only, not an offer to extend credit. Credit approval required. Information and or dates are subject to change without notice. Not available in all states. Certain programs may not be eligible. Other restrictions may apply. Okay, who plays Wordle? So this was this fun game we all got into during the pandemic. And then the New York Times bought the game Wordle. And so now the New York Times runs it. And this might include Wordle spoilers for today. So if you do Wordle and you haven't played yet today, this is the last story I'm talking about on the podcast, so feel free to tune out. So New York Times runs Wordle. For those who aren't familiar, Wordle is this game where, let me pull up today's thing on my phone, where you have to guess what five-letter word it is, and you get one, two, three, four, five, six chances to guess it. This is just very addicting because you can only play once a day. There's only one word a day. Everyone on the planet has the same word for the day. I like it because you can only play one word a day and then you can't just sit on your phone and continue to play Wordle over and over and over. So to me, it's just a nice mental break. It's short and then I can move on with my life. Well, there was a controversy brewing today, overnight, because apparently people had two different words. Now, here comes the Wordle spoilers. So I've warned you, okay? So today's Wordle word for me was shine. It took me five guesses to get it, but I got it. Apparently, however, some people had a different word. Their word was fetus. Oh, yes. The Wordle word of the day was programmed to be fetus. Obviously, that is quite the coincidence considering the national debate around abortion. Now, the New York Times claims that this was totally by chance. They put out actually overnight an editorial note about this because they sensed this was going to be sort of a controversy. At 12:01 a.m., they put out this kind of lengthy editorial note saying it was titled "A Note About Today's Wordle Game." At the New York Times Games, we take our role seriously as a place to entertain and escape, and we want Wordle to remain distinct from the news. So they go on to offer an explanation, but they don't use any of the words because they don't want to spoil the game for anybody, but I'll just read it to you. It's been just over 3 months since the New York Times acquired Wordle, the hugely popular puzzle created by Josh Wardle. Wordle continues to delight millions of people every day, but as we move it over to the Times' technology, we have continued to discover challenges. Today, for example, some users may see an outdated answer that seems closely connected to a major recent news event. This is entirely unintentional and a coincidence. Today's original answer was loaded into Wordle last year. So the New York Times is saying, look, if you see this word pop up, just know that we didn't put the word fetus into the game today. It was preloaded last year, they claim. Okay, this goes on to say, but because of the current Wordle technology, it can be difficult to change words that have already been loaded into the game. When we discovered last week that this particular word would be featured today, we switched it for as many solvers as possible. You won't receive the outdated version if you have refreshed your browser window. But we know that some people won't do that, and as a result, will be asked to solve the outdated puzzle. We want to emphasize that this is a very unusual circumstance. We are committed to ensuring that tens of millions of people have a gratifying and consistent experience every day. I tend to believe the New York Times that the fetus word was a pure coincidence. I mean, it is quite the coincidence, but you can imagine a bunch of like people very heated about the abortion debate. Get out. I don't mean to laugh, but just imagine this. Let's say you've got someone who's very pro-choice, and they are worked up over a possible repeal of Roe, and they just want to take a break from it all. They turn off the news, and they just get out their cell phone to play a trusty game of Wordle. Just a nice, relaxing game where they can disconnect on their phone. And then they find out that the word of the day is fetus. I do believe the New York Times. I don't think the New York Times would ever intentionally put fetus as the word of the day right now, given the climate in this country. There are some people on Twitter who definitely believe that the New York Times did this intentionally. I just don't think so. I think it is an incredibly unfortunate coincidence. That's it for this episode of the Undivided Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And as I tried to make the pitch on you earlier, now's a great time to become an Undivided subscriber. Not only are you going to get access to all of our great podcasts, but to our video content, to extended interviews, monthly Q&As, and much more. You can do that at patreon.com/undivided or brandycruz.locals.com. Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.